This is KWMR Point Reyes Station, the community station that knows how to swing.
KWMR is underwritten by our friends, neighbors, and the West Marin Culture Shop in downtown Point Reyes Station, offering picnic and pantry items with a focus on preservation and fermentation, plus a season-inspired rotating lunch menu at the Culture Cafe. Open Thursday to Monday. More information at wildwestferments.com. This is KWMR 90.5 FM in Point Reyes Station, 89.9 in Bolinas, 92.3 in the San Geronimo Valley. Listener-supported West Marin Community Radio. The time is 10:01. This is Turning Pages, special edition. I'm your host, filling in with my third week here for Amanda Eichstadt. And we are in the middle of A Briefer History of Time by Eric Schulman, from The Big Bang to The Big Mac. Last week, we left off at page 113, and we're about to begin Superpower Confrontation, in which two powerful nations risk it all. Once again, this is by Eric Schulman, and it is a Creative Commons license. It's written in 1999 and revised in 2004. The Earth, 1962 AD. Superpower confrontation in which two powerful nations risk it all. There are, at the present time, two great nations in the world which seem to tend towards the same end, although they started from different points. I allude to the Russians and the Americans. All other nations seem to have nearly reached their natural limits, and only to be charged with the maintenance of their power. But these are still in the act of growth. All others are stopped, or continue to advance with extreme difficulty. These are proceeding with the ease and the celerity along a path to which the human eye can assign no term. Their starting point is different, and their courses are not the same. Yet each of them seems to be marked out by the will of heaven to sway the destinies of half the globe. Alexis de Tocqueville, 1835. Are you glad to be going off shift, Commander Prochnab?
Yes, Sub-Lieutenant Ratzirk, I am, although I am not sure that our replacements will be as kind to the Earthlings as we have been. Have you finished the report on Soviet potential nuclear weapon mishaps?
Yes, sir. Would you like me to review it with you?
No, I'll read it later, but I would like a summary of some of the potential American mishaps, in particular, the events related to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
As you know, that leaves out a lot, since the current Earth year is 2004, and we have been on the station since 1949, but that crisis is certainly the most extensive that has occurred during our watch. On October 15th, 1962, photos of Cuba taken from an American U-2 spy plane revealed nuclear-capable Soviet missiles that would have been able to reach much of the United States. Many of President Kennedy's closest advisors supported an immediate invasion, not knowing that the Soviet field commanders in Cuba had 98 tactical nuclear weapons that could very well have been used against American invasion force. On October 22nd, President Kennedy increased military alert to DEFCON 3. That involved moving nuclear-equipped interceptors from their home bases to airfields around the country, did it not? Exactly. And because some of these dispersed airfields lacked the proper personnel and equipment, a number of jets had all the safety devices removed from their nuclear weapons. The individual pilots had the ability, though not the authority, to fire their nuclear-tipped missiles. On the evening of October 22nd, the president addressed the people of the United States, announcing to the world that the presence of Soviet missile bases in Cuba and demanding that they be removed. On October 24th, Soviet ships on their way to Cuba were stopped by U.S. naval vessels. DEFCON 2 was announced, which is higher than any other state of readiness that America's nuclear forces have reached before or since. I seem to recall that at the time, the first Minuteman ICBMs had only recently been delivered to their base in Montana. Yes, sir. They had been delivered in September, and on October 24th, the missile officers began frantically working to get the missiles online as soon as possible. Because of this rush, a number of safety features had to be bypassed, with the result that individual missile officers had the capability, though again not the authority, to launch the missiles under their command. What was the next significant event? Early in the morning on October 25th, a U.S. Air Force sentry at the base near Duluth, Minnesota, spotted an intruder climbing the fence. He shot at the intruder and sounded the sabotage alarm, which alerted airfields all over the area to watch for possible saboteurs. At Volk Field in Wisconsin, however, the klaxon signaling a nuclear war went off by mistake. The pilots immediately started their nuclear-armed interceptors and were moving down the runway where an officer drove his vehicle in front of them and ordered them to stop. The base commander had phoned Duluth and found out that it was the sabotage alarm that should have sounded, not the nuclear war klaxon. Had the planes taken off and found any U.S. B-47 or B-52 bombers in the air, it is quite possible that they would have mistaken them for Soviet bombers attacking the United States. Was the intruder caught? Yes, the intruder turned out to be a bear. During the next day, October 26, the U.S. Navy searched the Soviet map, ship Markula, and allowed it to continue onto Cuba after finding no missiles aboard. Meanwhile, Vandenberg Air Force Base launched an ICBM. This was a previously scheduled test, but no one had thought to cancel it, despite the fact that the other 9 test missiles had been loaded with nuclear weapons during the previous 2 days. It was known that the Soviets sometimes had agents watching the base. Such agents could easily have been aware of the installation of nuclear weapons on the test missiles without realizing that one of the missiles still had its test package intact. What happened the next day? On October 27th, an American U-2 pilot made a navigational error and ended up in Soviet airspace. The pilot radioed for help, and nuclear-armed Air Force F-105 jets were scrambled to escort the pilot back. The Soviets launched interceptors to shoot down the U-2, but it returned to American airspace before they could reach it. Had the U-2 been attacked, it would have been within the local Air Force Base commander's authority to order the F-105s to use nuclear missiles against the Soviet aircraft. The interceptor pilots had the ability, and in the case of a communications failure, the authority to attack hostile Soviet aircraft using their nuclear-tipped missiles. That same day, another U-2 was shot down over Cuba, despite the fact that the Soviet commander on site lacked the authority from Moscow to order such an attack. What happened next? On the morning of October 28th, U.S. early warning radar picked up a missile launch from Cuba and predicted an impact in Florida. No impact occurred, however, and it was discovered that a test exercise tape had been accidentally inserted into the operational computer system. At the same time, a satellite came over the horizon at just the wrong moment, resulting in a real radar detection despite the fictional missile. Later that day, Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev announced via Radio Moscow that all nuclear missiles in Cuba would be dismantled, and the worst part of the crisis was over. For the record, did we play any part in convincing the Soviets to back down? None. Had the Earthlings wanted a nuclear war, they would have gotten one. How much of a part did we play in making sure that none of the accidents you described led to an unintended nuclear war? I'll have to go back and check the log. For the record, though, we do have the authority, though not the obligation, to prevent accidental nuclear war on the Earth during our watch. Of course, I certainly hope that the Nabsonoiden is more liberal than in interpreting these directives than he used to be. The people of Tau Ceti IV were such a promising species before he let them destroy themselves by accident. ...1969 AD, the Earth. Internet expansion, in which a network of computers develops. Zero in October 1969, and the graph increases to millions of internet hosts above 225 by 2001 October. Historical global internet host data increasing all the way up to 233,101,481 hosts as of January 2003. 1974 AD, the Earth. Resignation, in which one human quits his job. President Nixon.
They, the Brookings Institution, have a lot of material. I want Brookings. I want them just to break in and take it out. Do you understand?
Yeah, but you have to have somebody do it, says Haldeman. President Nixon.
That's what I'm talking about. Don't discuss it here. You talk to Hunt. I want the break-in. Hell, they do that. You're to break into the place, rifle the files, and bring them in.
Haldeman. I don't have any problems with breaking in. It is a Defense Department-approved security.
Nixon. Just go in and take it. Going around 8 or 9 o'clock.
Conversation transcribed by Stanley I. Cutler and published in Abuse of Power, 1997. June 17th. Five men are arrested for breaking into a National Party headquarters at the Watergate Office Apartment Hotel Complex. June 18th. The president's campaign manager and former attorney general holds a press conference at which he says,
"There is no place in our campaign or in the electoral process for this type of activity, and we will not permit or condone it."
June 19th. The president's press secretary describes Watergate as a third-rate burglary attempt, but says that, quote, certain elements may try to stretch this beyond what it is. July 19th, in a conversation with president's chief domestic affairs advisor, the president says,
If you cover up, you're going to get caught.
August 29th. The president holds a press conference at which he notes that
what really hurts in matters of this sort is not the fact that they occur, because overzealous people in campaigns do things that are wrong. What really hurts is if you try to cover it up.
September 8th. In a conversation with an aide, the president says,
"The cover-up is what hurts you, not the issue. It's the cover-up that hurts."
October 18th, the president's press secretary says no one at
the White House directed activities involving sabotage, spying, or espionage.
November 7th, the president is reelected with 60.8% of the vote. January 15th, four Watergate defendants plead guilty to the break-in. January 28th, the president's approval rating is 68%, his highest ever. February 2nd, the judge in the Watergate trial says he is not satisfied the full story was disclosed. February 7th, the Senate votes 70-0 to establish a select committee to investigate Watergate. February 22nd. In a conversation with the vice chair of the Senate Select Committee on Watergate, the president says,
"The main thing is to have no damn cover-up. That's the worst that can happen."
March 14th. In a conversation with the White House counsel, the president says,
"Espionage and sabotage is illegal only if against the government. Hell, you can espionage and sabotage all you want. Unless you use legal means. Can I get away with it?"
March 16th. In a conversation with the White House chief of staff, the president says,
"The only thing you have to bear in mind is there's only one thing worse than having any substantive disclosures that have not come out, and that is to have the cover-up exposed."
March 19th. In a letter to the Watergate judge, one of the defendants writes that he and other defendants were under political pressure to plead guilty and remain silent. He claims higher-ups were involved in the break-in and that perjury has been committed at the trial. April 25th. In a conversation with the Attorney General, the president says,
"I don't want any cover-ups of anything. You know that."
April 27th, the acting director of the FBI resigns after it is revealed that he destroyed evidence relating to the Watergate scandal. April 30th, the White House announces the resignations of the Assistant Secretary of Commerce, the President's Chief Domestic Affairs Advisor, the White House Chief of Staff, the U.S. Attorney General, the White House Counsel, and the Undersecretary of Transportation. The president concedes there had been an effort to conceal the facts. May 11th, in a conversation with the new White House chief of staff and the old White House chief of staff, the president says,
"I'm not covering anything up."
October 12th, the vice president resigns and the House minority leader is nominated to replace him. October 20th. The new Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General resign after refusing to fire the special prosecutor. The Solicitor General is named Acting Attorney General and fires the special prosecutor. November 17th, in a televised program from Disney World, the president says,
"In all of my years of public life, I've never obstructed justice. People have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I am not a crook. I earned everything I got."
December 6th. During hearings about an 18-and-a-half-minute gap in a crucial taped conversation, the White House chief of staff suggests that
Perhaps some sinister force had come in and applied the other energy source and taken care of the information on the tape. Attorneys from the special prosecutor's office suggest the 18-and-a-half-minute gap may have been caused by the president. January 30th. In his State of the Union address, the president says, "I want you to know that I have no intention whatever of walking away from the job that the American people elected me to do for the people of the United States." April 30th, the president releases 1,254 pages of transcripts of taped events within the White House in lieu of turning over the tapes themselves. There are many cases of expletive deleted, adjective deleted, and unintelligible. July 24th, Supreme Court rules 8-0 that the president must turn over 64 tapes sought by the special prosecutor. July 27th through the 30th, the House Judiciary Committee passes 3 articles of impeachment against the president. August 9th, the president resigns. 1990 AD, the Earth, reunification, in which a wall goes up and then comes down. It is almost never when a state of things is the most detestable that it is smashed, but when beginning to improve, it permits men to breathe, to reflect, to communicate their thoughts with each other, and to gauge by what they had already have the extent of their rights and their grievances. The weight, although less heavy, seems then all the more unbearable. Alexis de Tocqueville, September 12, 1853. 1945, after the end of World War II, Berlin and Germany are divided into 4 sectors occupied by the Soviets, Americans, British, and French. From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. Churchill, March 5, 1946. 1949, Germany is divided into East Germany and West Germany. Every gun that is fired, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed. The world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. Dwight D. Eisenhower, April 1953. Whether you like it or not, history is on our side. We will bury you. Nikita Khrushchev, November 17, 1956. Let every nation know, whether it wishes you well or ill, that we shall pay the price, any bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. John F. Kennedy, January 20th, 1961. 1961, the Berlin Wall goes up. There's no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. I don't believe that the Romanians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Poles consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. Gerald Ford, October 6, 1976. A strong nation, like a strong person, can afford to be gentle, firm, thoughtful, and restrained. It can afford to extend a helping hand to others. It's a weak nation, like a weak person, that must behave with bluster and boasting and rashness and other signs of insecurity. Jimmy Carter, October 14, 1976.
God will not forgive us if we fail.
Leonid Brezhnev, June 1979.
Superpowers have behaved like two heavily armed blind men, feeling their way around the room, each believing himself in mortal peril from the other, whom he assumes to have perfect vision. Henry Kissinger, September 30th, 1979. If Washington proves unable to rise above primitive anti-communism, if it persists in a policy of threat and dictate, well, we are sufficiently strong and we can wait. Neither sanctions nor belligerent posturing frighten us. Konstantin Chernenko, October 16th, 1982. The present U.S. administration continues to tread an extremely perilous path. It is time they stop thinking up one option after another in search of the best way of unleashing nuclear war in the hope of winning it. To do this is not just irresponsible, it is madness. Yuri Andropov, March 27th, 1983. My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes. Ronald Reagan, August 11th, 1984. It is better to discuss things, to argue and engage in polemics, than make perfidious plans of mutual destruction. Mikhail Gorbachev, April 19th, 1987. We are in a war called peace. It is a conflict that has not ended and will probably continue for generations. The Soviets do not use armies of nuclear weapons to wage this war. Their principal weapons in the struggle with the West are propaganda, diplomacy, negotiations, foreign aid, political maneuver, subversion, covert actions, and proxy war. In this conflict, not only our own freedom, but that of the rest of the world are at stake. Richard Nixon, January 1988. I believe we are on an irreversible trend toward more freedom and democracy, but that could change. J. Danforth Quayle, May 22, 1989. The Cold War began with the division of Europe. It can only end when Europe is whole. George H. W. Bush, June 1, 1989. Let's not talk about communism. Communism was just an idea, just pie in the sky. Boris Yeltsin, September 13, 1989. 1989, the Berlin Wall comes down. Today, Eastern Europe is again Central Europe, which it has always been historically, culturally, and philosophically. Zbigniew Brzezinski, March 7th, 1990. And we will continue in 1990. With Turning Pages, A Briefer History of Time from the Big Bang to the Big Mac by Eric Schulman. You're tuned to KUMR 90.5 FM, Point Reyes Station.
KWMR is underwritten by Brick Maiden Breads, offering service at their bake shop and cafe on 4th Street in downtown Point Reyes Station, as well as at local farmers markets and retail locations. Current hours and employment opportunities at brickmaidenbreads.com. KWMR is underwritten by Black Mountain Cycles, Point Reyes Station's local bike shop. Proud to support community radio and KWMR. Black Mountain Cycles is located on Main Street and can be found on the web at blackmtncycles.com or at 415-663-8125. We return to Turning Pages. I'm your host, Matt Gallagher. We're reading A Briefer History of Time, From the Big Bang to the Big Mac, by Eric Schulman. ''1990, Reunification of Germany. What I see in Marxist ideology and the communist pattern of rule is an extreme and cautionary instance of the arrogance of modern man, who styles himself the master of nature and the world, the only one who understands him, the one everything must serve, the one for whom our planet exists. Intoxicated by the achievements of his mind, the modern science and technology, he forgets that his knowledge has limits and that beyond these limits lies a great mystery, something higher and infinitely more sophisticated than his own intellect. Vaclav Havel, October 25th, 1991. 1991, Dissolution of the Soviet Union. 1992 AD, The Earth. World Wide Web creation in which a new medium is created. Mark Andreessen will tell you with a straight face that he expects Netscape to become the standard interface to electronic information. Gary Wolfe, Wired Magazine, October 1994. 'Come and listen to my story about a kid named Mark, poor college student, didn't have a place to park. And then one day, after drinking lots of beer, on his computer he wrote a web browser. Mosaic, that is. Pictures. Linked text. Well, the first thing you know, Mark's a decibillionaire. Friends all said, Mark, move away from there. Said California is the place you ought to be, so he packed up a box and moved to the valley. Silicon, that is, Mountain View, where sun is. Young Mark had a company, Lottie, it was hot. 5 million shares sold out in a shot. Some folks objected they don't have any sales, but so many used their browser that it was to no avail. Netscape, that is, market share, web dominance. Well, now it's time to say hello to Bill and Microsoft, who never take it lightly if their market share is lost. Internet Explorer may not be a pretty swap, but you'll need a lot of help getting it off your desktop. Lawsuits, that is. DOJ. Questionable business practices. 1998 AD, The Earth. Composition, in which a book is written. The greatest part of a writer's time is spent in reading. In order to write, a man will turn over half a library to make one book. Samuel Johnson, April 6, 1775.
What causes someone to summarize the entire history of the universe in 200 words or less? Boredom and hubris. Let's say you're an astronomer and you're working on a Saturday afternoon because you have more to do than can be fit in a 40-hour work week. After a few hours of work, you realize that you're bored by the details of what you're doing and that you've got to do something different, even if only for an hour or so. Or else you'll take hit any key to continue far too literally. Even though you know that the end result of your work will be an improved knowledge of the universe around us, getting to that end result can be a trial at times. While surfing the internet, you find history of the United States in 100 words or less. The thought crosses your mind that if the history of the U.S. can be summarized in 100 words, then it should be possible to sum up the history of the universe in 200 words. And who better than you to do it? You are, after all, an astronomer, and cosmology, the study of the origin and history of the universe, is a subfield of astronomy, so you feel quite well qualified to write such a history. In no time at all, it seems, you've summarized the history of the universe in 200 words or less. Now what do you do with this work? Because you have internalized the philosophy of publish or perish, you submit the piece to the internet news group rec.humor.funny, which is read by almost 500,000 people around the world. Then, 42 minutes later, you receive a missive that begins, "I have accepted your joke for rec.humor.funny. Oh joy, oh rapture, oh bliss, your work is going to be read by hundreds of thousands of people in dozens of different countries." The piece appears 8 weeks later and is brought to the attention of the editor of the Annals of Improbable Research. See the glossary entry for more information about this most important scholarly journal and who wants to publish it. 7 months later, it appears in that August journal, and 9 months after that, the editor asks whether you'd like to perform the piece at the Ig Nobel Prize Ceremony, an annual event honoring those whose achievements cannot or should not be reproduced. The editor has just finished The Best of Annals of Improbable Research, which contains two of your pieces, and is signing copies of the book at the ceremony. Because of this, two representatives of the publisher are in attendance when you present the history. They ask whether you'd be interested in turning it into a book. After a month or so, you've put together a proposal, and the publisher has accepted it. Then you find out that you can't write the book after all because I've already written it. Better luck next time. Many people have contributed in one way or another to this book. For example, I contributed quite a lot to it, but if it weren't for the people listed below, this book might not exist and certainly wouldn't be what it is. So let's all say thank you to Mark Abrahams, Emily Anthony, Albert Chow, Carolyn Cox, Virginia Cox, William Cox, Gary Diamond, Jim Griffith, David Hyatt, Jonathan Kaplan, Sloan Lederer, John Michel, Regulo Noetzi, Emily Schulman, Marvin Schulman, and Ben Zuckerman. Thanks, folks. 2004 AD, the Earth. Extrapolation, in which future events are discussed. Extrapolation is a very important concept, but can be quite difficult to do well. To put simply, extrapolation is trying to figure out what will happen based on what has already happened. Interpolation is easier. That's just using what happened at the start and at the end in order to figure out what happened in the middle. In fact, extrapolation in Irish is athithariniac, which literally translates means getting beyond between points. I wrote the extrapolation chapter of A Briefer History of Time on December 31st, 1997. In it, I made what amounted to four predictions. Sales of A Briefer History of Time would be significant during 1999. The year 2000 Y2K problem would strike on January 1st, 2000 and cause some serious difficulties. A Briefer History of Time would be nominated for a Hugo Award for Best Related Book in early 2000, and humanity would finish exploring the galaxy by 60 million AD. So how well did I do? About 5,000 copies of A Briefer History of Time were sold in 1999. That's pretty good, but not as good as I've been hoping. I'll give myself half credit for this prediction. Y2K was a total flop. I hope this doesn't mean we'll be overconfident about Y10K. Zero credit for this prediction. A Briefer History of Time was not nominated for a Hugo Award. No credit. Humanity hasn't yet finished exploring the galaxy, but since 60 million AD is still pretty far off, this prediction will remain untested for now. See, I told you extrapolation was hard to do well. So instead of attempting to use my powers of extrapolation to make further predictions about the future, I'll use this space to tell you a little more about the version of A Briefer History of Time you're reading right now. First of all, it isn't exactly the same as the hard copy version. In some ways, it's better. I fixed typos and made a few improvements. However, it lacks the illustrations the hard copy version has, and some of the chapters aren't formatted quite as nicely. But one big plus is that it's free. I'm releasing this version under the Creative Commons license. The full legal details can be found at the very end of the file after the glossary. But it basically amounts to this. You're free to copy, distribute, display, and perform this work as long as you give me credit. Do not use this work for commercial purposes, and do not alter, transform, or build upon this work. If you enjoyed reading this version, perhaps you'd also like to read the book in its original form. It can be purchased online from a number of vendors, the most popular of which is probably Amazon.com. If you buy it through my listing on that page, I would be very happy to sign it for you. I enjoyed writing the original A Briefer History of Time, and I've enjoyed revisiting it for this electronic version. I hope you've enjoyed reading it. Let me know what you think. With kind regards, Eric Schulman. Compendious glossary in which familiar and unfamiliar terms are defined. Mark Abrahams, the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research, the editor of the books The Best Annals of Improbable Research, Sex as a Heap of Malfunctioning Rubble and Other Improbabilities, and the Ig Nobel Prizes, and all-around great guy. Acritarchs. A resting stage of primitive eukaryotic life that lived between 1.8 to 1.5 billion years ago. Acritarchs are always homebed. Aerobic reactions that occur in the presence of oxygen. Anaerobic reactions, on the other hand, require the absence of oxygen. Aerobic exercise is good for you, while anaerobic exercise, sprinting, for example, tends to hurt a lot. Agnosticism, the belief that one is uncertain about whether or not there is a God. Amino acid, the building blocks of proteins. Although hundreds of amino acids are known, only 20 are used to create proteins in life as we know it. Amino acids have been discovered in meteorites, in the gas between stars, and in certain hair care products. Amish. Followers of the sectarian movement that split from the Anabaptists in 1693, primarily over the Anabaptist belief that only the pure should be involved in religion. Anabaptists, members of the Christian sects who believe that baptism should only be administered to believers and that the infant baptism is not authorized by the Bible. Ananda Marga Yoga. Founded in 1955, this religion teaches that by meditating several times a day, devotees can reach a state of bliss. Andropov Yuri, a river boatman who worked his way up to become General Secretary of the Communist Party of the United Soviet Socialist Republics in 1982. Anglicans, members of the Church of England, which split off from the Catholicism in 1534 so that Henry VIII could get his marriage to Catherine of Aragon annulled. Angular momentum, the quality possessed by objects in circular motion equal to the mass of the body multiplied by its velocity, multiplied by the radius of the circle. Angular momentum is conserved, which means that if the radius decreases, then the velocity increases. A dramatic example of the effects of angular momentum occurs when rotating ice skaters rapidly increase their spin simply by pulling their arms in. Annals of Improbable Research, a wholly remarkable international science humor magazine devoted to publishing science articles that are educational and humorous. Call 617-491-4437. Write P.O. Box 380853, Cambridge, Massachusetts, zip code 02238, USA. Email is air@improbable.com. Or open your web browser to improbable.com now for the subscription information. Anshar. In Sumerian cosmology, he mated with his sister Kishar to create the great gods, including Enki. Anteater, a mammal that feeds mostly on ants and termites. You probably knew this already, although you may not have thought about the termites. Anthony, Emily, helpful non-scientist, critic, and friend from way back in the days of the second Reagan administration. Antiparticles. All particles have antiparticles that are identical to them except for having an opposite electromagnetic charge. When particles and antiparticles meet, they annihilate each other, and their mass is converted into pure energy as decreed by Einstein's famous formula E equals mc squared, where E is energy, M is mass, and C is the speed of light. Many science fiction spaceships run on matter-antimatter engines. Arboreal, living in trees. Arvidsson Johan, he discovered lithium in 1817. Arkwright Richard, British cotton industry innovator. He built factories to employ hundreds of people, a dramatic change from the situation until then in which only a few people worked together under one roof. Arthropods. One of the most successful animal phyla, arthropods make up more than 75% of all known organisms and include insects, spiders, crustaceans, and trilobites, until they kicked the proverbial bucket. Assemblies of God. Founded in 1914, it is the largest of the Christian Pentecostal traditions. Asteroid. Ranging in size from a few miles to more than 500 miles across, asteroids, or minor planets, are chunks of rock that orbit the sun and are most common between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. The author discovered one of these in 1993, but has since lost track of it. Drop me a line if you happen to spot minor planet 1993 GZ. Atheism, the belief that God does not exist. Atoms, the building blocks of everyday matter. Atoms are composed of nuclei surrounded by electrons. The protons and neutrons in the nucleus are held together by the strong nuclear force, and the electrons are bound to the atom by their electromagnetic attraction to the protons in the nucleus. Most hair care products have large numbers of atoms in them. Aum Shinrikyo, a belief system that teaches that supreme bliss is attainable through a sequence of initiations after leading a monastic life and severing ties with family and friends. Believers with a knowledge of chemistry are particularly prized. Arenacian, a period of time during the late Stone Age that was characterized by widespread use of flint blades and bone tools. It began around 38,000 BC and lasted until 20,000 BC. Austria, a country in Central Europe. Babism, founded in 1844 by Mirza Ali Muhammad, also called the Bab, this sect of Islam forbid polygamy and was violently persecuted. Baha'i, founded in 1863 by Mirza Hossein Ali Nouri, a follower of Bab, the principles of this faith include the oneness of humanity, the oneness of religion, the evolutionary nature of religion, harmony between religion, science, and reason, the elimination of prejudice, the equality of men and women, the abolition of extremes of wealth and poverty, and universal peace. Baptists, members of Christian sects who believe that baptism should only be administered to believers and that immersion is the only baptism method authorized by the Bible. Belgium, a country in Western Europe. Beryllium. Beryllium nuclei have 4 protons and usually 5 neutrons. On Earth, a hard gray metal that is sometimes used in golf clubs and nuclear weapons. It emits neutrons when bombarded by helium nuclei. Berzelius Jones, he discovered selenium in 1817, silicon in 1823, and thorium in 1828. Bible, the holy book of Christianity. Big Bang, the event that denotes the origin of our universe. Billion, a number popularized by the late Carl Sagan. It is written numerically as 1,000,000,000, or 10 to the 9th power in scientific notation. In the United Kingdom, 10 to the 9th is often referred to as 1,000,000,000, and the word billion means 10 to the 12th, which is what people in the United States call a trillion. Bipedal, having 2 feet. Black hole, an object so dense that even light cannot escape from it. Black holes are typically 5 to 1 billion times the mass of the sun and spend very little of their time gallivanting around the universe, gobbling up whatever comes near. Bosons, particles with integer spin. Don't worry about it. Brachiopods, these are marine animals that look like clams, but trust me, there are significant differences that I can't recall at the moment. I'll get back to you on this one. Branch Davidians, founded in 1929 as a sectarian movement from the Seventh-day Adventist Association, which was founded as a sectarian movement from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Branch Davidians believe that the second coming of Christ is imminent. Parishioners with prior military experience are particularly prized. Brahmanism, the sect was founded in 1946 and split into the Christian Pentecostal movement in the 1950s. They believe that the first sin occurred when Eve engaged in sexual activities with the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Brezhnev, Leonid Ilyich, graduate of the Metallurgical Institute in Dnipropetrovsk. His thesis, The Design of Electrostatic Cleaning of Furnace Gas in the F.E. Dzerzhinsk Factory, received a grade of excellent. He also led the Soviet Union from 1964 until his death in 1982. His favorite game was dominoes. Broken symmetry. This is somewhat complicated particle physics concept involving rather complicated mathematics. I wouldn't worry too much about it. Bruderhof, formed in 1920 out of the Anabaptist tradition, this sect believes that the current society is a system of injustice based on violence, fear, and isolation, and that a new social order based on unity and joy must take its place. Brzezinski Zbigniew, a national security advisor to the President of the United States from 1977 to 1981. Hi, Dr. Brzezinski. Buddhism, founded in India around 530 BC by Siddhartha Gautama, and is the religion that teaches that existence is suffering, that suffering is caused by craving and attachment, and that nirvana, or the cessation of suffering, can be reached via the Eightfold Path of right views, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Buoyancy, the upward force felt by objects immersed in a fluid. Balloons float in the air because of buoyancy, while the hair of television personalities is buoyant because they use better hair care products than you do. Bush George Herbert Walker, born in Massachusetts and raised in Connecticut, He went on to become the President of the United States in 1989. Calvinism, founded in the 16th century AD by John Calvin, this sect of Protestant Christianity teaches that human beings have no free will and that who will go to heaven is predetermined. One might think that this would encourage people to do whatever they wanted to, but instead it encouraged them to be thrifty and industrious as to show everyone else that they were destined for salvation. Cambrian, the geologic period between 544 and 505 million years ago. Carbohydrates, organic compounds like starches and sugars that are composed of carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen. Hair care products sometimes contain carbohydrates. Carbon. Carbon nuclei have 6 protons and usually 6 neutrons. On Earth, pure carbon is either diamond or graphite, one of which is used in jewelry and the other which is used in pencils, briquettes, and other useful items. Carbon dioxide, a molecule composed of 1 atom and carbon and 2 atoms of oxygen, CO2. On Earth, a colorless, non-flammable gas required for photosynthesis, released by respiration, and used in carbonated beverages. It is a greenhouse gas. Carbonic acid, H2CO3. It is produced when carbon dioxide dissolves in water. It is a component of acid rain. Carlyle, Thomas, born in Ecclefechan in 1795, this Scottish writer lived on a farm in Craigenputtock for 6 years. He hated and feared democracy. Carnivore, an animal that mostly eats other animals. Carter, James Earl, Jr., a nuclear engineer and Sunday school teacher who went on to become President of the United States of America in 1977. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002. Congratulations, President Carter. Carthage. Founded in 814 BC, this ancient city-state could have been a contender, but instead went 0-3 in the Punic Wars with Rome from 264 to 146 BC and was utterly destroyed as a result. Catholicism. A direct descendant of the original Christian church, which believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and that by faith in Christ, people may obtain salvation and eternal life. Cavendish, Henry. He discovered hydrogen in 1766. Cell. In biology, the smallest unit of living things, if we assume viruses to be non-living, unicellular organisms have only one cell, while multicellular organisms, like you, can have trillions of cells. Cells reproduce, convert and store energy, manufacture molecules, and are present in most hair care products. And on page 143 of A Briefer History of Time, I believe that we will take a break. And it will be determined whether in the next week we would continue with this glossary at the end, which is quite entertaining. Perhaps I'll reach out to Eric Schulman, thank him for this, for his non-copyrighted but Creative Commons edition of his book in digital form. You've been listening to A Briefer History of Time, From the Big Bang to the Big Mac, by Eric Schulman, originally written in 1999 and re-edited and released in 2004. And that is how we are able to read a not in the public domain or not given direct permission from the author, as heard in the beginning. So maybe I will do that and see if he would get back to me. And perhaps he has something else to read that's in the Creative Commons. But I will see you, or I will talk to you and read to you next week. And it could be a totally different book. Thanks so much for listening.